always be clear where you get your conservative talk.
The St. Louis Business Journal is now reporting that liberal billionaire George Soros is the largest shareholder of Odyssey,
the parent company of KMOX and 97.1 Talk.
Soros' maneuver raises critical questions about the future of media ownership and influence.
Money and attention is power. And when he has the money and he controls what's on the radio stations, he's going to be able to control the minds, essentially hundreds of millions of Americans.
St. Louis's trusted source and number one.
For conservative talk.
This is News Talk STL.
Vic Porcelli.
Come on, you're Italian. You understand.
Every day is a busy day all of a sudden.
You talking to me?
Tough and smart, and I love Italian, so, you know, he's definitely Italian.
At least I have this show to come and talk about it and let some stuff up.
What kind of a show are you guys putting on here today?
The Vic Porcelli Show.
Well, how about that? Here I am sitting in for the wonderful Vic Porcelli. I'm Karen Cataline, and it's a real honor. We tease, but he's among the best ever, and I'm proud to call him friend. So wherever you are, Vic, have a great day.
Yeah, day off, Karen.
Day off. Yeah. And I'm joined by the also great Ken Williams. Boy, are you talented.
Oh,
you do more stuff than I've ever seen, and you work longer hours than anybody knows. Did I give that away?
Yeah, kind of. Yeah, we had a long conversation and texting and all kinds of good stuff last night. That was kind of fun, actually.
Yeah, you put in a lot of hours to put 15 hours of radio together. I think we're going to do the pledge together, are we not?
Yeah, we are coming up, but I'm still trying to get a hold of Leslie Corbly, by the way. I've called a couple of times, so I'm going to try one more time again after this. So after the Pledge of Allegiance, I'll try one more time.
Well, you know, that's what we like to do. We vamp. You can give us one of the other clips. You only gave me 24, 26 clips.
I'm a slacker.
And then I went and I said, "Can I have this one?" And now you have to do that one too. But that is a killer clip.
Yeah, it is. It really is, man.
I can't wait. So, you know, if we don't get Vic, if we don't get Leslie, then we'll punt and we'll do more clips. That's all.
Yeah, exactly right.
Okay. Very good.
So do you want to do the pledge?
Are we ready?
I'm ready when you are.
You got your hand on your heart?
Yeah, I do now.
Okay. I do too. I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America
and to the republic
for which it stands, one nation
under God,
indivisible,
With liberty
and justice
for all.
All.
That delay got you, didn't it?
Yeah. You know what? It sounded like the one time that I sang the national anthem for the New Jersey Nets and I had to turn
really?
My ears off. Yeah, I did years ago. And I felt like that clip in Lou Gehrig, you know, where you hear the whole sentence after you say it.
Yeah, the echo.
So, because the echo was unbelievable.
Vic loves the echo.
He does.
I can't remember the name of the announcer, but he says that every single time he says he hears an echo, he has to do his impersonation of that guy, that announcer.
Oh, really?
Yeah, I can't remember the name of him. I'll remind him later to tell
him. There's an echo. Okay, well, I hope we get Leslie.
Yeah, I'm going to try one more time.
But if we don't, maybe you could go ahead and play, just for the heck of it, because this was going to be one that was going to be a backup anyway.
Yeah.
And it's clip number one.
Oh, yeah.
The wonderful Caroline Leavitt. See what she had. Let me set it up first.
Yeah,
real quick.
Yeah.
I mean, you got to call her. You got to call the guest.
Well, sure.
Caroline Leavitt is so doggone good, especially after the last one. And she is answering the question of whether President Trump was calling to execute members of Congress. And here's her explanation.
This morning, President Trump accused six Democratic lawmakers of seditious behavior punishable by death. Just to be clear, does the president want to execute members of Congress?
No. Let's be clear about what the president is responding to, because many in this room want to talk about the president's response, but not what brought the president to responding in this way. You have sitting members of the United States Congress who conspired together to orchestrate a video message to members of the United States military, to active duty service members, to members of the national security apparatus, encouraging them to defy the president's lawful orders.
How about that? That is just astonishing. First of all, I can't imagine anyone answering that question better. Not only did she just say no, flat out, flat no, but she used the questioner's language by saying, to be clear.
Yeah, to be clear.
And what bugs me about this, along with everything, is that leftists continually try to change the meaning of words. So they delegitimize, they make it small ball, something that truly is sedition. But yet I happened to be talking to somebody on Twitter or whatever the other day, and he said, oh, well, Trump used the word fight 12 times. So we're supposed to conclude that using the word fight means exactly what he thinks it means. But when you have sitting members of Congress telling people who work for the federal government that they should disobey orders they don't like, it's astonishing. And so what do they jump to? Well, Trump is calling for them to be killed. No, what he's really doing is pointing out how far we've come from the rule of law, that this is something that was punishable by death at one time.
Oh, exactly right.
What do you think?
And, oh, I totally agree with that. And I think they jump on any word that he says. It doesn't matter anymore, Karen. It doesn't matter what he says. He could say hello. And they just see how he said it, though? He said hello in that fashion, and that means he's ready to kill people. I mean, yes, he did say it blatantly. But you know what he was doing? He was reciting the exact law that's in place for that crime.
Right.
That's all. Well, that's all he was doing.
And I watched a little more of what they were talking about last night. And it's true that federal employees, these in defense, are not required to obey a truly unconstitutional law. But they were so vague in this. And what we're talking about, we don't have the clip here, but that six members of Congress, if you saw the clip, they make a video claiming that there's something unconstitutional that's going on under the Trump administration. And of course, it's all very vague, and they don't point to anything.
And you know
the truth is, they're not saying anything.
No, they're not. And we can play that later. I have the clip available. So, but right now we have Leslie Corbly on the line.
You see why I need you? Otherwise, I'd go all over the place.
That's all right.
Well, this is great. I'm so glad. And I have interviewed her before. And so let me tell you about our very first guest. She's an author, an attorney, and author of Progressive Prejudice, Exposing the Devouring Mother. Leslie Corbly joins us right now on 101.9/94.1 News Talk STL. Hi, Leslie. Good to have you here.
Hi, thanks for having me.
Yeah, I requested to talk to you because I am enchanted. It must be that old social worker in me that is absolutely enchanted with the term in your book. And we'll talk about the lovely Michelle Obama as well. But the term in your book called, there's Ken laughing, Devouring Mother. Oh, my, is that a powerful term. I want you to explain to everyone what the devouring mother that you're exposing in Progressive Prejudice. What is that?
Sure. So the devouring mother is the archetype of female predation. And I think we have a really easy time in our culture right now talking about male forms of power and predation, but we really struggle to talk about what feminine forms of power and predation look like. So just like a woman can exercise masculine forms of predation, so of course can a male. But the devouring mother is, like I said, the archetype of female predation, and that's embodied by the use of using compassion as a guise for control. So, for example, Munchausen by proxy is one of the most well-known mental disorders that affects almost exclusively women. And this is when women will use children, usually it's children or others under their care, as like props, essentially, to feed their own like egotistical desires. So they'll invent fake disorders for the child, or, you know, medicate the child for something that my child doesn't need. So they're acting as if they're being compassionate, but in fact, they're controlling the child because they're not actually engaging in a form of caretaking, right? It's the use of caretaking as a form of power and control.
And they need people to be victims and dependent upon them so that they can play the victim, right?
Yes, yes, of course, yes.
I mean, you've got to keep people down.
You've got
to keep people down so you can take care of them, of course. And how many people don't? I wrote a book about this, but we're talking about your book and your book. And you mentioned the word predation. I love that. So mm-hmm. I just looked it up. The capturing of prey for food, the act of robbing, victimizing, or exploiting mm-hmm. others, the act of pillaging. And to do that from a place of victimhood, I think your book does a brilliant job of uncovering that lie that says, oh, I'm only doing what's best. I'm doing it for the children. Mm-hmm. I'm doing it for the poor and dispossessed. What do you think about, I think his name is Saad Gaad. I forget his name. It's terrible. He came up with the term suicidal empathy. Is that related to what you're talking about? Because one is taking power. The other one, I guess, is buying into the power and wanting to kill yourself over it. Unwrap that for us.
I think they are related. I think some people are aware of what they're doing on the predation front, or more aware. I'm using you in some way to gain what I need. Although it's unclear of how much awareness some of these women or mothers have. But I think that the, as far as the suicidal empathy goes, I think that's more of the victim's mindset, in the sense of feeling some kind of empathy for the person harming you. So sort of Stockholm syndrome.
Well,
as opposed to the person directly perpetrating.
This stuff is so seductive to talk about, because we all know people like this. One we all know, whom we've been watching, is the incessantly whining and complaining Michelle Obama, who, you know, has more privilege than most whites I've ever seen, but she's still whining and complaining. And recently she said that the reason that Kamala Harris didn't win is because America is just not ready for a woman president. What say you?
I don't think that's entirely true. I think she's a remarkably weak female candidate. I actually think Hillary Clinton would have won if she hadn't had the name Clinton attached to her. I think she had a lot of baggage that comes with the Clinton brand and the public.
Can I just throw in that maybe, you know, using bleach bit and being caught in lies and having a separate server may have had something to do with that as well. But go ahead.
Yeah, that's what I mean. Her connection to corruption is what I mean. I don't think the public trusted her. I think there was a trust deficit. And that was ultimately what did her in. I don't think it had anything to do with her competence or the fact that she was a woman. I think there are other women that could run, that could conceivably win. I don't think that's entirely the issue. I mean, I think that in some quarters could be, but I don't think that's broadly speaking the issue. Just like an African-American can run for president and be successful, which Barack Obama proved. However, I mean, yeah, I think that there's a mentality on the left of wanting to find any reason that they can't succeed that has little or nothing to do with the merits of what he may have lost. So there's no surprise there. But Kamala Harris was also just she was an incredibly weak candidate. She had never won a primary. I don't know.
Yes.
From what I can tell, there was no real reason to believe this woman could or should have won the presidency. And she was more or less selected. She wasn't nominated. What I mean by that is it wasn't like there was a long period of time for the public even to become acquainted with her as a presidential candidate. There was something like 4 months, right?
From you know what, Leslie?
Not particularly long.
Yeah, and we don't have much time left. We have a couple of minutes, but with all of this fun psychoanalysis, let's Let's use it to talk about Michelle Obama for a minute. This is a person who's traded on race, on the politics of division and jealousy and victimhood. How is it possible for someone like that, who has these mansions all over the world, in Hawaii and elsewhere, not to have an ounce of gratitude? She is incapable of gratitude. What's going on there?
I don't know. I don't know. Like, I can't dive deep into her psyche, but it's interesting.
Oh, let's.
Say her husband, I think, embodies more of the devouring mother archetype in the sense of talking a lot about caretaking and engaging in a lot of control. So I think that's interesting. I think she's always, in my personal opinion, come off. I think her husband is much more savvy politically in the sense of coming off more likable. He's very smooth rhetorically.
His stock is going down, though, and I'm happy to see it. People are finding out that he's not.
Shelf life. I always thought he was had a very fake persona. That was just my personal impression of him politically. He had a very, very polished persona, but I didn't perceive it as real. As to how she could do that, I think that's not uncommon, though, for people in the spotlight, especially people who may or may not have wanted that, in the sense of you can have all the privilege in the world, but if there's something in your character that's not aligned, I don't think gratitude is self-evident to people who don't have an interest in expressing gratitude, right? Or who only see the negative. I think that has more to do with character.
Well, and they have to do that in order to be
possesses.
Forgive me. They have to do that in order to play that devouring mother. You know, and so we've come full circle.
And it certainly plays well politically, right? Well, it plays well on the platform she'd be on, right? If she talks about that, she may be perceived as being genuine or real or whatever it may be on that side of the aisle. But
yeah,
I just don't. I'm not shocked by that. I think that's not uncommon for people who have a lot to want for what they don't have.
Yeah. Just one last thought, and that is that with someone who isn't phony, I think that's one of the magic of Donald Trump when he came along, is that people said, you know what? He says what's on his mind. He's being real. And now they're trying to pretend to figure out how to be real. Leslie Corbly, how do we find your book, Progressive Prejudice, Exposing the Devouring Mother?
Sure. It is on Amazon. You can just type in my name or the title, or you can go to LeslieCorbly.com.
Very good. Thanks so much. Always a pleasure to talk to you, Leslie.
Thanks for having me.
Thanks, Leslie.
Thank you.
Thanks, Ken. Well, we're going to be back, and Ken and Karen. Ooh, that sounds a good ring to it.
Hey, it does.
Ooh,
it sounds kind of radio-ish.
The Ken and Karen show. Yeah. Uh-oh. When we come back on 101.9/94.1 News Talk STL.
For podcast articles and more, find us on newstalkstl.com.
Senator, on that note, just I guess a question that's out there. Why wouldn't they have been released the last 4 years when President Biden was in office?
Well, that's the question every American is asking. Not every American, but so many Americans are asking. What the hell is he hiding? Why doesn't he want them released?
Oh boy!
Karen,
so
can
much
I ask
to
you
talk
a question
about?
Can I ask you a question about
yes.
that? Okay.
Uh-huh.
Do you think that he was purposely evading the question, or do you think
no.
he just didn't hear him?
No, I think he had a Joe Biden moment.
Okay.
I think that he's losing it. He's under enormous stress because everything he's worked for his whole life, which is power, control, and to be loved by the masses for stupidity, is falling apart around his ankles. And so he's so stressed because his own party has turned against him. I mean, even being Palestinian didn't help him. And now... He's on autopilot. You know, autopen? This is autopilot.
Wow, Karen.
And he's on autopilot. And when people ask him about Epstein, he automatically goes to Trump derangement syndrome. He couldn't hear that this was under Biden. It's amazing to me.
I didn't consider that at all because I was thinking going another way, but you're so right. He has never experienced not having that control, not having that power to be able to actually control the narrative. He has no control over the narrative at all. Can we hear this again? Because it's so short.
Please.
And I want everybody to understand.
Everybody listen, yes.
What he's hearing, yes. What he's listening is a question and then his answer. Because his answer is referring to Trump. So
right.
Listen up.
Senator, on that note, just I guess a question that's out there. Why wouldn't they have been released the last 4 years when President Biden was in office?
Well, that's the question every American is asking. Not every American, but so many Americans are asking. What the hell is he hiding? Why doesn't he want them released?
Something else I noticed. Schumer has gotten into also autopilot because he never expects a negative question to be asked about Joe Biden.
That's true.
Ever.
Yep.
And all of a sudden it's about Joe Biden and he goes directly to Trump. They have been coddled so much that they just push a little button in their head and they go off. I also think he's losing it. I mean, stress can do that. I'm not saying he has dementia, but I am saying that stress can make people do weird things.
Sure.
We've all experienced it when we're a little bit on, stressed out. And what is being challenged here with Schumer is the very thing he loves more than anything else.
What's that?
You know? Well, the center of power. I mean, look what was willing to do. He's a nominal Jew. And I love that Trump calls him a Palestinian. He was willing to just throw his identity right down the toilet. It still didn't help him. You know?
Yeah.
Nothing helped him. Because commies chew up everything that they see eventually. They eventually eat themselves. It's sad, but I'm not too sad about it.
You know what I mean? I know what you're saying because
he deserves it.
It amazes me, but it's also not unexpected. Where he will put his finger in the air, and if they want him to go left to fascism, if they want him to go left to Marxism, to Islam, whatever they want him to do on the Democrat Party as the new Socialist Party. He'll go. He's ready to
go. Sell out his own grandmother.
He's ready to go.
If he has one. You know, you gave me so many gorgeous, beautiful clips.
Let's go.
It was ridiculous. But these I've got to get to because they go together. Okay. They're like Tweedledee and Tweedledum. Excuse me. None other than Jasmine Crockett. Let's hear clip 14 first.
Oh, okay.
Okay.
You ready?
Yeah.
Okay.
Folks who also took money from somebody named Jeffrey Epstein, as I had my team dig in very quickly. Mitt Romney, the NRCC, Lee Zeldin, George Bush, Win Red, McCain Palin, Rick Lazio. I just want to be clear. If this is the standard that we gonna make, just know we gonna expose it all. And just know that the FEC filings, they are available for everybody to review. This is absolutely ridiculous. You just...
Okay, before we hear the next clip.
So much.
So much, yes. McCain Palin. Jazzy thinks that's one person, by the way.
I think so.
First name McCain, last name Palin.
Right.
Okay. This woman is, I think I can say this on the air, this woman is the queen of BS. I have never in my life heard anybody be able to put words together to sound like she knows what she's talking about when she absolutely does not.
I think she's an idiot. But
She's probably an idiot like a fox because she's covering. You know what they say? If you don't have the facts, baffle them with BS. Yeah. That's what she's doing. And when she said somebody named Jeffrey Epstein, she thought, now this is true. She thought that she was referring to the Jeffrey Epstein. She's just being sarcastic about it because she thinks she has the goods. On these people.
And keep in mind in that last clip, she did not say a Jeffrey Epstein.
She said
Jeffrey
didn't.
Epstein. And we'll go back to that.
And let's hear, and I made you do this at the last minute. That's I apologize, okay. But you are so good. This is the smoking gun. And listen to how she tells us she lied and that it wasn't a lie.
But that has been donated to a prior campaign of his. Do you want to correct the record on the people?
Listen, I never said that it was that Jeffrey Epstein. Just so that people understand, when you make a donation, your picture is not there. And because they decided to spring this on us in real time, I wanted the Republicans to think about what could potentially happen, because I knew that they didn't even try to go through the FEC. So my team, what they did is they Googled. And that is specifically why I said a Jeffrey Epstein. Unlike Republicans, I at least don't go out and just tell lies.
Is she actually...
I at least don't go out and just tell lies, unlike the Republicans. I mean, there's a word for this. It's called chutzpah.
Oh, yeah. And she, all right, let's play the beginning of the clip, the previous clip now. And, okay. And keep in mind, she said that she said a Jeffrey Epstein. Now, listen.
Folks who also took money from somebody named Jeffrey Epstein.
That's all she said.
Somebody named Jeffrey Epstein. Yesterday on Fox News, they showed many, many Jeffrey Epsteins, Dr. Jeffrey Epstein. There's a lot of there are a lot of people named Jeffrey Epstein. And she was perfectly happy to lead people on, or she was just too dumb to know. I mean, you can be dumb and sneaky at the same time, but I just think that's amazing. You know, my husband and I have this guilty pleasure. We like to watch videos. What are they? They're cop body cam videos.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. I love those.
Which is one of the great joys. And maybe it's something we could do a whole segment about. One of the great joys. Another time in which the left got snookered by its own stupidity, just like is happening with Epstein. They called for body cams on cops, and then we got to see what was really going on out there on the street. The cops are putting up with stuff we would never put up with. And what you see is, even when people are caught with the goods, shoplifting, much worse, but shoplifting and the like, they refuse to admit that they were wrong. They cannot take responsibility in any way.
Oh, yeah.
They have become professionals at lying their way out of things. And even when they're being taken away in handcuffs, they play the race card. They do everything. And not all of them are of a particular race, but they're always finding a way to blame others.
And you know, Karen, we always say in the show, she's either being deceitful or she's being an idiot. And I think both are wrong. So...
Well, it's a pleasure. I just want to tease, we're going to have another segment in which we're going to invite people to either call in the 11 o'clock hour, Facebook.com, Rumble, and the chat room. And we love doing that. So in the 11 o'clock hour, look for that. We're going to introduce a topic that we want people to weigh in on.
Yeah, it's going to be fun.
Okay. All right. So we have to take a break, don't we, Mr.
Yes.
Ken Williams? Okay. This is 101.9/94.1 News Talk STL. Karen Cataline filling in for the great Vic Porcelli. We'll be back.
For podcasts, articles, and more, find us on newstalkstl.com.
I don't want to step on Newt Gingrich.
No.
Okay. Action. Go. This is Karen Cataline filling in for Vic Porcelli on the Vic Porcelli Show, here with Ken Williams. What a pleasure it is to do talk radio and to feature people who stand for and have passion for what we have passion for. And we don't always have to agree, but oh boy, this next one we do. It figures into everything. I discovered a spectacular organization called Victims of Communism Memorial Foundation. Many people are familiar with it. And we have a special guest who is one of the speakers for Victims of Communism, because she experienced it. She lived it. What could be more relevant? You already see on the news, I heard that with Mamdani visiting Trump, which we could talk about later, they're already trying to rehabilitate him by saying, well, you know, Trump calls him a communist, but really he's a democratic socialist. Yeah. that and I don't know what. So here to talk about that and so much more is the lovely and wonderful Milda Matachunaita Boyce. I've been practicing that. Director of Fellowships and Coalitions at the Victims of Communism Memorial Foundation, where she leads Victims of Communism outreach to partner organizations. She just got through giving a presentation to a group of students at VOC Museum in Washington, D.C. about her experiences living in communist Lithuania as a child. Nobody better than to tell kids about what's really going on. Milda, welcome to News Talk STL. Good to have you.
Karen, it's a pleasure to be here. Thank you so much for inviting me.
Yeah, I mean, nobody can talk better and try to warn us than people who've lived it. First of all, how did your presentation with the students go?
It went really well, actually. I really enjoy those presentations and kind of making these sessions more interactive. I do ask questions because I don't only, obviously, I want to share my story. I share the visuals, the pictures, you know, from my archives, but I also want to ask questions to kind of turn their critical thinking. And a lot of times when they answer those questions, they sort of answer to those, you know, issues that we were just discussing in terms of socialism and communism being on the rise. So they do realize, you know, what it actually is. So we do host quite a few private schools, homeschooling groups. And today I had Women Supporting Women homeschool group. However, in the past, I've also given lectures to public school high schoolers and middle schoolers. So those are our, you know, the audiences that we want to reach because there's not that much in their textbooks about this subject matter.
Yes. Well, I want to take advantage. I want everybody to hear some of the things that you tell the students. I know we can't possibly cover in depth your story, but give us a couple of the highlights about what it was like living in communist Lithuania when you were a little kid.
Absolutely. And that's exactly the content of my presentation, Karen. I usually start kind of showing them the school where I would go to school, wear a uniform. Everybody had to wear a specific uniform, but the main part of it was that we had to wear a pin, a star, a communist star with Lenin's picture in it when he was younger. And I usually ask them who that is in the picture, and they do guess. But the point of that pin was the fact that, you know, Communist Party tried to groom the kids from the early age. So you relate to young Lenin. So you want to become like him. And you were called an Oktoberist at that point because you were, it was compared to October Revolution. It was based on October Revolution. And you are usually a second grader through the fifth grade. Then in the fifth grade, you graduate into a pioneer and you have to wear a red scarf as a symbol of being a good Soviet child that wants to become a good Soviet man. And then further on, you graduate into communist youth in the university. And obviously, the end goal is to become and be loyal to Communist Party. So I do show images of the school, and there was a dentist office actually in our school and many other schools. So I show them this is how free healthcare looked like. There were no private dentist offices. There were no choice where you go to treat, you know, to have good dental hygiene. You were forced to go into those school dentist offices with obviously no proper equipment, with no anesthetics. It was actually almost like a torture chamber. So to a lot of kids, this is a huge eye-opener that obviously we didn't have a choice. We didn't have resources. And there was no wealth distributed equally. It all went to the party elite, and the regular people, you know, were standing in line. That's kind of on my following slides. with empty shelves in the grocery stores.
But Milta, isn't that what all the communists promise? Is that we're going to get rid of all those elites and we're going to equally distribute all this wealth to the people, its power to the people. How do you tell kids and adults that they're being lied to? You know?
Precisely. Precisely, Karen. Communist Party elites lived in wealth and stole from government, stole government assets, stole from the population. And you know, the population suffered from shortages and repression. And they were forced to tell publicly that, you know, the communist community and society is the happiest society in the world. There were so many lies, and those slogans are actually preserved in some of the museums. So it was obviously a lot of theft and corruption happening during communist regimes.
You know what strikes me, Milda, when I hear you talk is so much to talk about, is that the communists of today are using the language of accusing capitalism of what they do. Not to say that capitalism is perfect, but when you say that the elites stole all the money and they're using it for themselves, isn't that the primary accusation that these young leftist communists are making against capitalism?
Absolutely. It's an absolute double standard, because capitalism still remains the preferred general economic model, and despite its imperfections, like you said. But then it invigorates the free market economy. It provides all the freedoms to human beings. You practice your just fundamental human rights in choosing who you want to become, what business you want to start, what school you want to go to, while under communists, communism, obviously everything was rigid. You were told what to do. You had no choice. You had no say, and there was no innovation, there was a complete stagnation during communist times, especially for just the lower to middle class.
Yeah, and I just want to clarify, make clear, please make no mistake. I love the imperfections of capitalism. I think capitalism is a beautiful system, and I'm tired of seeing people, and I didn't want to sound apologetic for it, because as we know as Americans, a system that loves competition, excellence, meritocracy, we learn more from failure and losing than we do from winning all the time. And it builds strength and character. We're not talking about starving in the street, which capitalism also has a solution for. So I didn't mean to suggest that. That is back to the utopian promise. I talked to you about this off air. It's called the siren song of communism, right? Is that they're
That's
going
right.
to promise utopia for everyone. Anybody who's promising utopia is maybe promising utopia for me and not for thee. So it's a lie. And I just, you know, have you seen in the kids or in adults this glimmer of light go off, a light bulb above their head, in which they say, oh,
yeah.
Do you get that? Tell us about that.
Absolutely. I love actually watching these expressions when I, you know, when I share something like that, where I kind of shed light on what exactly it looked like, especially through personal story. And I think that really, you know, speaks to them much more than reading about it, let's say, in the newspaper or a scholarly article. So you can't make this up. This is real facts. This is history. So we need to shed more light on that.
Yeah. And the other thing that is now being, nothing has not become politicized, Milda, as we know. Our tying our shoes is now political. But now we hear about genocide, right? There are genocides, and we're going to talk about this, I think it's in the next hour, the horrific Christian genocides going on in Nigeria that are being ignored, and that's a whole topic in and of itself. But when we talk about the victims of communism, we're talking about the greatest, most horrific genocides in the history of the world. It's ugly, but let's talk about it now. Go ahead.
Absolutely. Look at Ukraine. Look at Ukraine and look at Nigeria, as you mentioned. Look at, you know, and a lot of people will debate and argue that it's not a genocide. There should be a specific definition. I know there's, a lot of people, and some people argue what happened in Armenia, but the proof is in the pudding, like they say. What's happening in Ukraine is absolute genocide, because if you heard scholars such as Timothy Snyder and many others, and Ukrainians themselves sharing those stories, how they don't have any regard for family. Women, children are being brutally murdered and captured from their country just because they're Ukrainian, just for the fact that they are Ukrainian. And Russia, the current Russia that operates really under old KGB system that was thriving under communism, is the fact that it's the way to get rid of the nation. They don't believe that Ukraine exists, that Ukraine, was part of Russia and it's not a country and these people are not real citizens of Ukraine. So it's horrifying how, these leaders that practice totalitarian ways and completely violate human rights and have no regard or respect or dignity towards human freedoms. So
that's how
problem.
You gain power. They're like people are just cannon fodder. I don't know as much as I should about the way that Stalin starved 13 million people in World War II. They just were fodder. And it's interesting that Russia and, the faux communists in Hollywood in the 60s, they just explained that away as meaning nothing. And then suddenly a button was pushed and then now they were anti-Russia. First they were pro-Russia when it was the most communist, and now they're anti-Russia when it's maybe a little less communist. Could you speak to that? I mean, they're communists, but could you speak to that about, do you get into that with either adults or kids about Stalin's murder of millions of people in
absolutely
World War II.
Absolutely. And this was called Holodomor in Ukrainian. And we've had exhibits at our museum, and we have a permanent exhibit in one of our galleries that thanks to war in Ukraine, a lot of visitors actually connect the dots. And to them, it makes more sense what is happening today and makes them point a finger that, perhaps those methods are communist. Those methods are totalitarian, that this was practiced during Stalin times, that, like you said, this many people were starved to death. They were deprived of, basic goods and food. Now this is happening today as well. They are cut off. Some of the parts of Ukraine are cut off by Russia grain and certain foods and goods. So this is the same method. So you can obviously, call it what you want and have a disguise of, oh, this is not as communist. However, they do use the same methods as under communist regime.
Yeah, we're going to have to start wrapping it up. But we didn't even get to the atrocities of communist China. It all comes from the same grandiosity, the same desire to be God in other people's universe. It is a true evil. And can you tell everyone take whatever the rest time you can about Victims of Communism Memorial Foundation, how people can donate, get involved, be a member, all that.
Absolutely. Thank you for this opportunity. I do care about my job deeply. And obviously, this is more than a job. This is more than a job because this is a mission.
Clearly.
So the Memorial Foundation is a nonprofit educational human rights and research organization. You can find us on victimsofcommunism.org online and check out our
gotta
programs.
Yeah, gotta leave it there. What a great story. Milda Matacunata Boyce, thank you so much for joining us. We'll be back.
Great
after this. All right, take care.
For podcast articles and more, find us on newstalkstl.com.